WFM. With Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green for her entertainment this afternoon. It's Monday the 10th of May and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Gary Murphy on Rory's comeback win with the major just weeks away.
But yeah, it's certainly great timing. You know, this is obviously a huge confidence boost going in there, knowing that, you know, my game is closer than it has been. You know, this win is validation that I'm on the right track.
Niall Moran is with us to talk curling as Antrim rock the banner.
Amach le Antrim. How much your whole score? Ooh, McManus. Well, in point time she gets shoot. Oh, man. I can say it's a point. I can't toss it.
I guess Leroy Rock rode the water into Negador down Shane Leroy Shin. I guess Smock do eat a good game on pass on Long Cooley and Shin.
I was listening to that teaser, wishing I had paid more attention in school because my cue was an Irish out. Anyway, Stephen Kelly and Conan Byrne are standing by to talk Premier League and whatever Sergio Aguero is trying at the weekend.
So now Aguero from the penalty spot. Oh, a little dink. He went for a Panenka and it was like a back pass to Edouard Mendy, who was able to stand up and just pat it down. And Sergio Aguero misses rather embarrassingly from the penalty spot.
Yeah, surely there's a few more sporting highlights than that. We would love to hear yours on 51552 or you can tweet us at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
How are we doing, guys? How are things? Sorry, I really forgot. That was me on the oak. Apologies. Ruby, you've got a haircut.
I did Dunner's to open this morning. First up, best dressed. Wow. Badly wanted. I had to get rid of that mullet, whatever was going on. It didn't suit me.
Absolutely.
Funnily enough, now I'd say you could have been in the queue in front of me, but anyway.
I'd gladly get in there. There was plenty to chat about sports wise to any barber at the moment, Marie. It was an incredible weekend again.
It really was, and I'm actually going to give my highlight as a bit of news today. So it was announced a little bit earlier on that female Gaelic players are going to receive the same amount of funding as their male counterparts. The Minister of State for Sport, Jack Chambers, announced it this morning. So under the current model, male players receive €1,200 from the state, while female players receive just €400. Now, it's something that we have talked about quite a bit over the last while, so it's great to see what really is a body of hard work from the women's GPA come to fruition. So they only formed in 2019, and one of their aims was to get to this point. So they've worked like tirelessly behind the scenes to try and bring women up to par with the men in the GAA. So this is really, really good. We've also seen in the past from the WGPA the Levelling the Field report, so we knew what it was costing our women to go out and play Gaelic games. So few of them were getting expenses. They were all contributing, well, most of them were contributing to their own physio, nutrition and all the rest. So this just feels like a really, really big day, a great start to the week, great start to Monday morning, and a really good end to a great sporting weekend as well. And it's going to make a big difference to a lot of our female athletes around the country. So I am delighted.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've been sure. It's hard to believe they weren't on parity. But anyway, it's changed. It's moving forward.
Just on it, Ruby, because we chat an awful lot about it, and I think it's important that, you know, we put an awful lot of pressure on other associations, on sponsors, on players groups, but it's great to see the government saying this is the way to do it, you know, and everything else now can follow, you know. Like, if government show the way and say there's parity, there's equality for everyone, and let's have it that way, then it's easier for associations, for sponsors, for everyone else to fall in line and say, like, Ruby, we've chatted about it before, you have it in your sport, but let's try to get it across all of them.
Yeah, but look, if the people on top are leading in the right direction, it makes it harder even for those underneath to not follow suit. So it has to be a good thing. But that was a good thing that came out of the GAA this weekend. Donners, have no doubt your highlight definitely revolved around the Oval Ball.
There was a lot of rugby on, Ruby, I'll be honest with you. And nothing really stood out in general, but it was just a brilliant weekend to make a slob of yourself and just sit in front of the TV. There was brilliant Super Rugby finals. The Reds beat the ACT, who I would always kind of show for, because when I was younger, they used to play brilliant rugby. But then the Crusaders beat the Chiefs. And everyone would know Scotty Robertson for his dancing. He's the fella that gave Ronan O'Gara a bit of a break, and Ronan O'Gara Gareth's La Rochelle loss. But just across the board, I know we go on that we're nearly sick of the Interpros and our rugby season's nearly done. We're nearly finished. But I just thought the Interpros were brilliant. I thought the both games were like, it was a great Munster got a win. And I think Leinster bounced back and you know, they were never going to lose three games in a row. But just the manner of the games, I thought there was brilliant niggle in them. And that's what I want from my Interpros. I kind of want 100% when the lads tug out in green, I want them to, you know, be tight and look after each other. But when they're in their provincial tops, let's rip into each other. And I just saw plenty more of it this weekend. It was across it, there was some brilliant performances. Hugo Keenan, I know not a whole lot of people were talking about him in terms of lines, but you know, if there needs to be someone to step up, if someone goes on for Warren Gatland, he certainly put his hand up. I think Conor Murray showed that sometimes when you get the backing or you get a big boost, it's someone to show confidence in you that you can put in incredible performances. Again, he's just a different class. And today it was announced that Ireland will play Japan and the USA, so hopefully there'll be an opportunity for some new young blood. And if anyone's top of the queue, I think it's young Gavin Coombs with Munster, just another massive performance. But it was an emotional weekend as well. We saw Carl Sinclair getting emotional about not making the Lions tour, and you know, it's brilliant to see the players hurt, and you know what I mean, that's this kind of decision.
And Tonica,
like,
even seeing them express that hurt, because you don't really ever get to see that emotion in public, and he was upset and you could see that it was pain in him, but he was able to just continue and not be put off by it almost, you know.
And I think he said as well that he, you know, he sat down and chat to an old school teacher of his, and he helped him channel it, and he's using it as the fuel. But I think he was quite gracious in what he did as well, in the fact that he wished the Lions all the best of luck. But it's good, Murray, like, you are devastated there at times, and it's good to know it, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not bulletproof.
And that's it, exactly, because even when you think about the issues that a lot of sports people have, just in terms of trolling, when you see a human side, you see that emotion and you realise, okay, they're not just the person that's ripping it up on the sports field, that they're exactly like everybody else. They get upset, they cry, they deal with winning, they deal with losing, but they're human beings at the end of the day.
Absolutely. And he's someone that's known, you know, he is an emotional animal. He's one of the guys, when we used to go out and play against him, you would kind of stoke the bear a bit, you know what I mean? You would try to get a reaction out of him, but he's channeling it towards his rugby. And I think guys like him will get reward for, along with the likes of Hugo Keane. And if you put in big performances at the moment, like we said, Murray, 37 picked, how many will get to South Africa, we don't know. But it was, you know, it was good to say that there was more good news as well today. Tadhg Furlong signed a contract with the RFU, which was good to see. But then on the other side of it, Quinn Roo is to move on from Connacht. So there's swings, roundabouts, and it's
back to Tadhg Furlong for a second, yeah. Because we've spoken, I can't even recall him many times, about length of contracts. So 1 year, what does that mean?
Yeah, I don't know. 51552, if you can help us.
Take a stab there, Donner Squad.
Yeah, I don't know whose call this is. Look, if I was any team at the moment, I would be trying to tie down for as long as possible. I just think he would honestly walk into any squad in world rugby at the moment. He's that good. He's that different. He brings...
He's 28. What's the average playing age for a prop that's as dynamic as him?
Can, oh yeah,
32 or 33.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's hitting his prime now as well, Ruby, in terms of just what he can do. His destructive scrummager, we've seen his footwork around the pitch. Like, I think he'll have options. And look, you do want your best players playing for the country and within the country, but I would not be surprised if this is a kind of just a little paddle for a while to see what the market's like in a year's time. Because, and look, I don't fault him. At this point with rugby players, and you know better than anyone, it's compensation for what they're going to put their bodies through. He takes an awful lot of load through him, and you know, when you look at the performance he constantly puts in, he deserves to turn big money. You would just love that he would be able to stay here, which he has for the year, and I think we should be excited about it.
For sure.
Yeah.
And another bit of good news, I'm all about the good news today. The Six Nations Championship is returning to RTÉ Television as part of a new broadcast deal. So RTÉ had lost the rights back in 2015, but from next year, both RTÉ and Virgin Media are going to show live Six Nations matches, and there's also going to be live coverage of the Women's Six Nations and the Men's Under 20 Championships, and it is also going to be on RTÉ Radio as well. So that's just really, really good. I think definitely I have missed it being on RTÉ Television because I've worked here, but I think a lot of people probably will feel the same. And look, it's staying on free to air, which is the main thing.
It just seems right for it to be back home, doesn't it, Ruby? And we spoke about this earlier on, just the importance of having visibility and being able to see your sport.
The value of terrestrial television to sport is incredible. The reach it has compared to... I know most sports have to go behind the paywall in order to reap the financial rewards of that, but it doesn't take long for a sport. It's okay. The GAA probably could because it's so big and so dominant. Soccer can. Not many other sports can. I mean, and look, it finished snooker from where snooker was to where it is now. It just... Cricket is the biggest one, I think, in the UK. And you think cricket used to be on Channel 4. Mm-hmm. Now it's solely on Sky, Formula 1 as well. Do they have the same audiences now they're gone behind paywalls? I'm not so sure they do. I think it's key for sports to have terrestrial television.
And just on it, like, rugby Six Nations is during a horrible time of the year. You know what I mean? It's dark, it's not all that nice. It's great to have something to, you know, finish up training and come back and be excited about. Ruby, what about you? Sporting highlights? Did anything?
I don't know if it's a sporting highlight, but I must say I thought a lot more of Rory McIlroy's mentality when I saw him taking the drop on the 18th yesterday evening, rather than trying to play the miracle shot that he would be known to do, to be himself and Harry Diamond, to stand there, figure it out, take the drop, play the percentages, stick his third shot in the middle of the green, two putt for five and you win. I just thought he showed great judgment and that killer instinct that he had. I thought it was back to rather than try to play a miracle shot and take six or seven. He just was calculated. He was looking at the scoreboard. I think himself and Harry Diamond fairly got it right yesterday, I thought.
Yeah. What drama.
I know what drama, but it was I admire people making the right decisions, and there was good decision making at the right time.
What I love about Rory is that he tells everything. You know, he'll tell you he's talking to a sports psychologist, he'll tell you exactly what he's working on, he'll tell you what he's feeling, what he thinks. And I loved the emotion that he showed afterwards as well, because we can sit here and talk about him all day long, and so many people do, but he's out there living it, he's struggling through the tough times, and you could see how much it meant to him afterwards. You could see the emotion on his face, and I'm a big Rory McIlroy fan as well, so I was delighted to see him back, and good timing, because that's all we need now is another sporting event to have interest in the summer.
Not sure about the pink though.
Just I liked
sure. it. Was a great colour. You would, of course.
I thought his outfit was on point, which is becoming half the battle, isn't it?
I'm not sure. Right, maybe on that note we might take a break before Ruby goes through you there.
New cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
I think when you haven't been in contention for a while, it never feels normal. I mean, I certainly felt it there on the back nine. You know, there were some tee shots and some shots I just had to stand up and really commit to what I was doing. And that's sort of been my mantra is, you know, try to just hit good golf shots until I run out of holes. And that's basically what I tried to do the entire day. Just hit good shot after good shot until you get to the end. But it felt, I mean, I'm certainly glad that the crowds were back, and I'm glad that I was able to get the job done in an atmosphere like that today. And I'm excited going forward now that we get to play in front of crowds like that, and you know, it was just an awesome experience to feel that again over the weekend.
It surely was an awesome experience for Rory McIlroy, and Gary Murphy joins us on the line. Gary, it was great to see him back. I suppose many believe he belongs.
Now, I'm afraid
You don't sound like Gary.
No, we've got...
he's very soft-spoken, Gary.
Yeah, incredible. He's in great form. Must have back Rory or something. He's in really good soft humour this evening.
Well, look, while we're waiting for Gary to come back, I do have another Rory McIlroy clip.
Oh,
so let's hear about how excited he is.
I think it's funny, you know, I came in here with zero form and I get myself into contention and I play great whenever the pressure's on. And I think back to the start of 2020 when, you know, I'd play great when the pressure was off and then I'd play not so good on a Sunday. I'm more excited about this because, you know, this is the first real test that I've had since working with Pete and sort of doing some different stuff, and for it to pretty much hold together all afternoon, first time of asking, you know, I'm excited about that.
He said he was speaking to his sports psychologist, Bob Rotella, over the last couple of months, and that he'd been working in conjunction with his coach, Pete Cowan. Sports psychology, obviously it's working here for Rory. It seems to have worked anyway, but he has dabbled in it in the past and it might not have worked. Just for somebody who is an individual athlete and in high pressured situations and nobody really to look to turn to bar yourself, is it something that you're in favour of?
Look, sure, everyone's different, Marie, and whatever works for each individual, it's good to talk and have people to be able to talk to, and also you have to be able to listen, I suppose, but it wasn't something I ever did, and plenty of my colleagues did, and a lot of golfers do. I don't know, maybe plenty of rugby players have as well, Dunica, but no, to me, I don't know, I tended to try and break things down myself and look at it, and, you know, what people say, like, you have to have confidence. Well, what is confidence? Confidence is only an ability to be able to think positively, no matter how wrong things are going. That's all confidence is.
And when you're looking at Rory and he's under pressure, Ruby, which he has been in a lot of times, like, just like, again, from being in situations like that, like, what are you thinking? Like, are you thinking he should be doing this, or I've been there before, or I can relate to
just
that?
Keep breaking everything down as simply as you can, no matter what situation he's in, whether he's standing on the 18th in the Masters or standing on the first tee box playing around the golf with his friends. It's still the same club, the same ball, the same tee. It's still going to be the same shot. It's just break it down and block everything else out. I would stand in Cheltenham. The Gold Cup was only a 3.25 miles conditions race when he took the title off it. So that's what I used to do. Just strip the titles off and this is just a normal race. Away we go again.
Did you have jockeys in your weigh room, though, that were better on big days? Like, I think with the crowd back out, we saw the best out of Rory. You know, when the pressure's on, there's these kind of athletes that they love those moments.
Yeah, well, Frankie Dettori definitely does. He's a showman, but yeah, he definitely rises to the occasion. You probably don't get the same Frankie every day of the week, but maybe in some circumstances, Dunica, but I don't know. It wasn't me anyway. The crowd didn't faze me or spur me on, but maybe you needed them, did you? Get you going there.
I certainly feel there's days where I could play beyond myself because of certain crowds. Yeah, definitely, especially in home, and there can be
then I challenge you to say then there was days that you obviously didn't perform as well without the crowd, that you should have been pushing yourself harder.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that. The main place I noticed it was when I went across to England, and I was there like, how come I can't get that same beat out of myself? And I don't know what it is. I think there's a tie in with it.
Nothing to do with age, of course.
Probably 100% did have to do with age.
And Dunica, what did you do for psychologists, like, both in Munster and in Ireland?
Yeah, like Ruby is saying there, I think it's a massive kind of individual thing. So we did use sports psychologists, but when we did it as a group, it was really poor and we didn't get a whole lot out of it. I remember we got Jerry Horsey in, who did an incredible job with us as a group. And he was probably one of the guys that was able to manage our group as a bigger group. But I think it's a massive individual thing, like Ruby saying there. I think it's, you know, I remember just chatting to a few of my teammates and they were like, I don't need a sports psychologist, my rugby's fine, it's everything else that goes on outside my life I need work with. I actually need a psychologist to help me with dealing with my family, dealing with all different kinds of stuff. So it's interesting to see, but I've just seen some of my teammates get and myself get massive. There's little areas that you might get bits out of.
My We Become Heroes podcast is out tomorrow and Ruby features, but I was listening to it today and something that struck me, Ruby, when I was listening, when you were talking about having to deal with certain things, you kept mentioning Gillian. And when I saw Rory as well there with his wife and the baby and just the change and obviously that support he has, just having that structure off the course, or for Dunica, well, it was probably chaos with all the kids, but, well, same for you.
Yeah, it is structure, but it's someone to be able to talk to. But someone that's just going to let you talk and listen to you. And that's what I had with Gillian. She'd let you rant away and that was the end of it. And I suppose get it off your chest. If you're not telling somebody your problems, you're only bottling them up yourself. So it is to be able to have someone to talk to. We were lucky enough, I was very lucky in that sense to have Gillian, but I always think that you need to be able to talk to others, and maybe in a team environment for you could talk to each other if there was something going wrong in a game, or if something had gone wrong in a match, you'd discuss it in the dressing room afterwards. I suppose as a jockey, you didn't have anyone to discuss it with, so you had to just keep bring it home with you, I suppose, and discuss it when you got home.
Absolutely, and look, it's one of the things I miss from rugby, that kind of, I know in the kind of business world it's called radical candor, where you just get honest appraisal, and that's something that used to happen in a Monday review meeting where you'd sit down and you didn't worry about the coaches, you worried about your fellow teammates just kind of going, what are you doing there and how do you think it's going to help us out, you know? I always get a kick out of people slagging Greg O'Shea, but that's a constant line in a Monday review. What's your thought process? You know, like, in other words, what was going through your head when you were having this meltdown? So it's an important thing to have, that you can kind of push each other.
Did you ever have a meltdown, Ruby?
Me?
On a horse, like?
No, I got a fall in ace one day, actually. I didn't realise at the time, but Gillian and the girls were actually on the other side of the railing, and I stopped the horse at the fall, and I was that taken. I fired a stick, and I was... But they were shouting at me, asking me, was I all right? I never even heard them. Gillian had to kind of turn the three girls and hunt them back into the Jeep, and, you know, tell them, oh, don't worry about that, he's just a bit cross. But, yeah, of course I did. I have different meltdowns here and there, but I often felt like when you did explode, you didn't feel any better for it. You always felt like you had to go back and apologise to the people you'd flipped the lid with. Yeah. That's the way I was anyway. I didn't feel any better for having a meltdown.
Donners?
Yeah, like you're saying there, you know...
I can't imagine you having a meltdown, Donners. I don't know why.
No, when I came to rugby, it was a bit different, though. You know what I mean? I think, but I can't remember having one either.
I had plenty, but I just always not remembering having to go back and say, look, I'm sorry, you shouldn't have really said that to you, and it just flew off the handle. I always ended up apologising for having them anyway.
Yeah.
So I tried to cut them out.
But Marie, it's interesting your point there about Rory. Like, of course, having his family there, and Ruby's point is right, there's the security of knowing that, you know, there's someone that's the shoulder for you to kind of... But there's also the pressure, you know, like when you're the provider, and I know it's probably different for him at this point, but he's someone certainly that, you know, he'll know now that, you know, he's dad and he's got to bring in, you know, the crust. I know it's different when it comes to Rory McIlroy. They're not going to be...
I heard AP saying it, actually. McCoy saying it during the year, one of the days, that it's the pleasure of pressure. And I suppose when you're in a position that you are under pressure, it does mean that you're at the top of whatever you're at. But that's not necessarily right, because people are under pressure. They don't have to be at the top to be under pressure. They can be under pressure wherever they are in life. But pressure, when you're under pressure, it means something. I'm nearly confusing myself.
No, I get
it. It means something to you.
Yeah.
And that's why I think being under pressure is actually a good thing, because... You know, you're thinking about it. It means something to you, and you're going to try your best at it.
Yeah. Someone has texted in, Donica, this is for you. He was wearing the pink t-shirt because it was Mother's Day in the USA.
Mother's Day? No, it's not.
It was in the USA, yeah.
Ah, well, okay.
So he actually thanked his mother afterwards and mentioned Erica.
And Poppy was there to watch it.
Do you know
first Mother's Day?
Yeah, look, I love him. Bar being an Ulster supporter, Rory's a good guy. But, like... He's turning very American with saying awesome constantly. I bet he's a guy that says trash, and he's like my kids.
I don't know. Like I tend to mimic my kids as well now. Like super this and super that. Like that's what they're
candy.
Hearing around them.
When they're watching too much Doc McStuffins and they're looking for candy and stuff like
that. Yeah, they want to go to the shopping mall. Well, Gary Murphy might be with us now. Gary.
Hello, Murray. How are you?
Delighted now to hear you. We were talking about Rory, and all delighted for him. And Ruby says he's back. Do you agree?
I think he is, yeah. I think he's never that far away because it's Rory McIlroy. But it was a big test for him because he's such a good record around Quail Hollow, and he'd had a month off. So I think that gave him a good chance to iron a few things out with his new coach. And the other side of it, and probably more importantly, if he had gone there and fallen flat in his face, I would reckon that relationship could have been dead in the water too. So it was kind of a big week for Pete Cowan as much as anyone, because his name is on the line. He's taken over the job. And it was just great to see. I actually fancied him to do really well. I tipped him up in the column last week. I just thought he's Rory, he's a light switch player, he can turn it on very quickly. But from Friday on, you know, he was the clear favourite to win a golf tournament, and he did everything that he needed in order to win. And I thought excuse me, I thought Harry Diamond was fantastic last night as well, and a lot of kudos must go to him, because he really got into Rory's face down the last, and you know, because when you're in that situation, you're not really thinking clearly, and that's where the caddy massively comes into the equation. And he just painted a pretty clear picture for him, and Rory executed and got the win. And it's kind of on to the PGA next week now, back to where he won in 2012, and all is right in the world of Rory McIlroy, and that's how quickly things can change in golf.
Kerry, as much flack as Rory McIlroy would have taken in the last, I don't know, 18 months or whatever, plenty of fingers were pointed at Harry Diamond as well, and he was under a bit of pressure carrying a bag as big as that. And so it was a big day for Harry Diamond yesterday too.
It was. I think the big takeaway and the big issue that I've always had kind of with Harry and Rory, and it hasn't, it's probably sounded like a criticism of Harry, but it's probably a criticism of Rory, because you can have the greatest caddy in the world on the bag, but if you're not listening to him, it's an irrelevance. You might as well stick it on an electric trolley for a tenner and push it around yourself. So I think Rory seemed to, you know, really take on board what Harry was saying. Now, whether it got to a stage in the relationship where Harry kept saying it and he just wasn't listening, and then he decided maybe just to carry the bag like a lot of caddies do when they kind of, you know, lose confidence in their message getting transported into the right part of the brain. But, you know, Harry's a fantastic golfer in his own right. He's known Rory for probably 20 years. He knows, you know, how he thinks and whatever. And I just think he got into his face last night and he listened to him, because, you know, it's an expression of his game as well. Listen, this is a shot, can you hit it? Well, of course I can't wait to see this type of thing. So, and that's the kind of player Rory is. He's an artist. He's not someone who, you know, sludges it around. So it was great for the two of them. It'll give both of them a huge lift in confidence. And as you were saying earlier, Ruby was listening in, their confidence is just, it's that great unknown. And once you have it, things just happen slower, you know, rather than everything is 100 miles an hour when you're struggling for it. So it's also, I think the fact that the Masters is over, the month ago, all that pre-Grand Slam hype, and, you know, that's the biggest challenge McIlroy has every April with Augusta. And it's on to a new phase of the season now. There's another, a different major coming up in a couple of weeks' time, and it'll be on to the US Open and then the Open after that. So he's in a good place, Rory. I think the Bob Rotella factor is huge as well. I don't know why he hasn't been using someone like that, because the big difference I saw McIlroy last night was that he really looked like he wanted it, and he wasn't going to let it go by him. He had that, remember when Paul Carrington won the USPGA in 08, he had those mad eyes, which I used to see a lot as an amateur playing against him. But, you know, it's just that innate hunger to want to win, and I think that's probably the only major weakness Rory has in his arsenal, that at times he kind of wants it to happen. And last night he just really, really needed it to happen, and he made sure that it did. And when you align that with someone who putts well, with his, you know, ability to hit the ball, he's almost unbeatable. And that's why he's so exciting, and that's why people wonder why he can't win 5 or 6 times a year. But I think COVID affected him massively last year off the course without the atmosphere, and then he just started fiddling around, which happens all the time with golfers, and he seems to be back now to just being himself. And as we know, when he's just himself, he's more than good enough.
Gary, he was also at a pains last night when he was asked about Pete Cowan to mention Michael Bannon as well, and he was heaping as much praise onto Michael as he was Pete.
Yeah, I think that's only right. You know, Michael Bannon he basically taught Rory how to play golf. And along with that too, I think coaches get way too much credit at times as well. You know, Michael has done a huge amount of work with Rory and helps him become the player that he is. But ultimately, it's the player that does it. I think, you know, there's no silver bullet either. You know, the player has to go out and have the courage of his convictions to execute as well. I think whilst, you know, Pete is now his main coach as such, there's probably a bit of a bit of PC going on there to keep everyone happy. But you know, I think at times coaches get way too much credit. You know, Rory McIlroy is a four-time major champion. You know, he's not reinventing the wheel. Pete Cowan is a world-class coach. He's coached, you know, some of the best players in the world throughout his career, and he's had an amazing career as a coach. But he's a consultant essentially. You know, it's the guy. You know, the guy who goes out and executes should always get the most credit, I think, along with the caddy, because the caddies are truly in the trenches with the players more so than anybody else.
Gary, we were talking a little bit earlier about the benefits of sports psychologists. What kind of work would Bob Rotella be doing with the likes of Rory?
Exactly what Ruby was talking about. You know, trying to imagine that it's not the Gold Cup, it's just it's a horse race. No, it's just a golf shot. You're trying to execute golf shots and not let external pressures, you know, get in the way, which is, as we all know, is the hardest thing to do. You know, the mind wanders. Ruby was talking about winning around Cheltenham, and I was trying to win an Irish Open. I was thinking of everything else, but trying to win an Irish Open. So, you know, oh, 420 grand, it'll do this and do that. So, you know, and you're dealing with all those external pressures that get in the way. And the great thing Rory had last night with his third shot in 18, it was such a difficult lie, he couldn't really, he had to manufacture a shot, so the artist in him and the instincts just came out, and he hit an amazing shot onto the green. Because can you imagine, had he hit that back into the water and took a 7 and lost the tournament, the rubbish that would go with that. So the line is so fine, it really is, and once you get the other side of the line, everything seems perfect. But the sports psychologist Bob Rotella, who, like Padraig Carrington, as we know, is one of probably the greatest sports people that's ever come from Ireland, an unbelievably deep thinker about the game, a very articulate, intelligent man, and yet he's had Bob Rotella by his side the whole time, and I'm sure Bob has learned a huge amount from Harrington too, and that knowledge will also be passed on. So I think Rotella would be fantastic for Rory, just to give him that freedom of mind to just try to be himself and get out on the golf course, realise there's, you know, there's no consequences to Rory's golfing career, and just go out, try to be himself, enjoy it and see where it takes him. And he seemed to have that look last night.
I can see why in golf you would need it. I only had to concentrate in a horse race for a maximum of 7 minutes. In a rugby match, it's two halves of 40 minutes and you're always on the go, whereas a round of golf is 4 hours and there's a lot of walking and standing around. So yeah, someone to teach you to concentrate.
Yeah, it's 4 days as well. You know, you've got four different sleeps as well. And, you know, even, man, I try to say this to people, you know, every day is a different day. You know, for people that go into a gym, like, golf is very similar. Like, some days you go in, you can lift more than you can imagine. And other days, you just can't lift anything. And golf is the same. Some days, just shots aren't there for you, because you're dealing with four different days, not four different bodies, but within reason. And it's trying to micromanage all of those things whilst you're surrounded by the best players in the world. And it's a very competitive environment. And it's trying to be as calm as you can when you're not, and tell yourself lies as often as possible, you know, to pretend the situation is always better than what it possibly is. But it's a difficult sport at every level. But at the top level, where the margins are so fine, like, there's so many good players now. I mean, a lot of the viewers from the night might even have heard of Keith Mitchell. You know, and Keith Mitchell is a world-class player. And it's not easy to win these tournaments. I think the fact that Rory, when he's on, he makes them look easy, and that's why people probably get frustrated with him.
Gary, just before we finish up, we've had a few texts in. We're asking for sporting highlights. I'm mentioning Niall Carney, and he's 61 to finish tied fourth in the Canaries.
Yeah, that was my highlight of the weekend. I think, you know, Rory winning another, his 19th PGA Tour event, another couple of million, is not really going to change his life massively. For Niall Carney, who's been a professional golfer since 2009, I was at the qualifying school in 2009 for my last time, and that was his first time. So he's been, you know, 12 seasons on the road trying to get to where he's at. He's still not there. Like, he doesn't have a full card, so he's reliant on invites. I was just looking at the entry list for this week, and I didn't see his name, which is very unfair in my opinion. But to shoot your lowest round for your highest finish, fantastic for Niall, and 50, 51,000, which will help the coffers, because he's been hanging around the mini tours forever, and huge credit goes to his dad as well, who's been a huge support for him, and Royal Dublin Golf Club and Hutton Mead Motors have done a great job supporting him the whole way. So I was so happy for Niall to see him finish fourth.
For sure, good for him. Gary Murphy, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you again soon. We're going to take a very quick break, and then the good news will end there, because we're talking hurling.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. Hurling was back with the bang at the weekend, and we got a shock, unfortunately, for our Clare people. It was the Antrim Clare result. Although there's plenty saying that it wasn't a shock, that Antrim were on track to get a big scalp, and they went out first weekend and did just that. Niall Moran, what do you think?
Well, Marie, how are you doing? Great to be back anyway, first of all. As I said, there was a lot of dogs glad to get a day off the leash there yesterday. There was a lot of ribs to veg on matches. It was a super start to the weekend. Obviously, the Antrim result was a standout. Look, you'd obviously be thrilled for them. But I suppose for me, Marie, and just some of the commentary, like, it's kind of a little bit patronising towards Antrim, in the sense that it was a huge shock, and do you know what I mean? They're great hurling people and all these things in Antrim, which obviously they are, but they're obviously very talented players as well. To be honest, we had spoken about it even here at home yesterday, having a bit of breakfast. It was a game that was kind of a very, very dangerous game for Clare going up. So number one, you were playing a team that were on the bounce after winning Chris Deering last year, and I suppose even people will tell you at any club level, when a team come up from intermediate, they're always very dangerous opposition in the first round of the senior championship the next year. And I think that kind of showed. I suppose maybe, look, both teams wouldn't have had a true reflection of form line, but I suppose Clare would have ended on a bit of a negative, whereas Antrim would have ended on a positive. And I suppose, like, that feel-good factor, that was able to probably to carry them through for the last 6 months, bearing in mind, I suppose, it was nearly December when they finished up hurling as well. So the bookies had it at 8-1. I'm not going to turn around and say to you it wasn't an 8-1 game, but there was no form line really to go off, and it was, all of Clare's fears kind of came home to roost. And look, Antrim played very, very well. Clare would be disappointed with a lot of things, and I suppose the breaks that an underdog needed, to be fair to Clare, I think Antrim got all of those breaks.
Darren Gleeson spoke a lot about the mentality of his Antrim players and how committed they were to it, and he looked like he was telling us the truth.
Yeah, Jesus, well, come here, like, in fairness to Darren, like, he comes out of a good stable of managers, he's a Port Roman, and, you know, I suppose I often talk about there, you'd see that one of Liam Sheedy's probably greatest achievements as a manager would have probably been taking Port Rowe to a North Tipperary Championship a number of years back. So, like, Darren would have been well used to versing an underdog and maybe on how to get the best out of themselves. But, look, they're a very, very well-coached side. They have very, very good hurlers. So my experience going back to years playing Antrim, the days you obliterated them, and there were those days, there tended to be an awful lot of things fundamentally wrong with how Antrim would have prepared. And then the days that you would have had narrow wins over them, which were many as well, they would have tended to gift you maybe a couple of goals at vital times of the game. And I think what you found out yesterday, and even the commentary last night, when the game was in the melting pot, they were composed in what they did. They took the right options. And I suppose, if nothing else, that really tells you the benefit of Chris Deering, in that, like, they had that opportunity to, they had a couple of years there at playing in pressurised situations, and they were able to bring those positive experiences. But look, I think when you look through some of the performances even yesterday on TV, like Kieran Clark on the freeze, Keelan Malloy midfield, and obviously everyone knows at this stage about Neil McManus, they were immense. But again, as I said, some of the breaks went their way. But look, as I said, it's patronising in a lot of sense. If we just eulogise Antrim about one performance, I think they'll be looking for more out of themselves before this National League is over. And look, they're going down to Kilkenny. It's a tough place to go at the best of times, but I'm sure they're licking their lips at the prospect of kind of going toe-to-toe with the Cats.
And what about Clare now, do you think, Niall? They have that meeting with Wexford next. Everything that's happened over the last 5 or 6 months has been well documented. I was expecting not only a win, really, but a performance over the weekend, just to put to bed all of that outside noise. But now, if anything, it's getting louder, and it's focusing on the Wexford game.
Yeah, and obviously, look, from an outside perspective, it's the perfect storm. Davies coming into Wexford, and
you know, I noticed the Searles have had a very rough time, but fairly or unfairly, depending on who you listen to. So, like, it is for Clare. Like, that is going to be a game that's going to be fraught with a lot of kind of sub-stories. But honestly, I think the issues that are at hand with Clare that you read about, obviously, I don't think they're directly impacting on this group, maybe with the exception of probably the funding element of it or the access to maybe the things that they need to prepare to the most. I think maybe one of the disappointing things for Clare is maybe the lack of real new talent over the last 4 or 5 years. And I suppose on a personal level, I see some of the lads that I'd have known, even like the Dermot Ryan from Cratlow, superb player, every bit as good as Anthony Delaney, the best of the counties. And obviously he's still playing senior, but he has bundles more in him. And I think he's a victim of just kind of a negative environment or toxic environment that they're kind of, that Clare are kind of currently operating in through no fault of the players or management. It's just a narrative that's there. It is going to be very, very difficult for them. Like, and look, as I said there yesterday, some of the things, like, look, they were 9-2 up there at one stage. They were cruising, and then all of a sudden, with the wind behind them, they found themselves 2 points ahead and conceded like a soft goal. So, like, that's when momentum swings and turning points. So, like you can block out some of the external noise, and if they actually focus on the game yesterday, like, there was things that, look, they're disappointed with letting Antrim back into it and making it a game, but okay, a couple of refereeing decisions, you know what I mean? Maybe there was a tad of a hometown decision there in terms of a non-award of a penalty, and, you know, so, like, there's things, and even the concession of a soft goal. So, like, you've got to be, look at the game in its merits. Like, Clare will be very disappointed with a lot of what happened over the 70 minutes, more so than what the last 5 or 6 months have thrown up.
That's for sure. And just looking at Limerick and Tipperary, a lot of the talk leading into this game was the fact that Tipperary needed to start beating Limerick again. They didn't quite do that, but they did seem like they were very close to doing it, like they maybe have that monkey off their back. Did you see anything different about this Tipperary team, maybe that we haven't seen in the seasons gone by?
In one word, no, to be honest. No. As I said, like, one of the things over the weekend, we were all so looking forward to the matches, and obviously it took off like a light yesterday with some of the games, even the Cork Waterford game, a very entertaining game to watch. Limerick and Tip, it kind of was predictable enough in nature, to be honest. Not really a whole pile different to last year's league fixture, which Limerick eventually won by 2 points. Tipperary, look, they're still working off the same artillery ultimately, like, and even the weight of the scoring responsibility yesterday, like, Jason Ford is still popping up at 14 points and they probably even need to get a bit more of the way things are. So yeah, like, Liam is obviously is bringing massive energy and they have massive work, and obviously, geez, they're going to be in the melting pot closer to it. But if I was to compare them to the performance of Cork, I saw a lot more new freshness in Cork, even with the same players. I can't necessarily say I saw the same in Tipperary. And so, like, for a team who've kind of been so prominent at minor and under 20 the last couple of years, there's still very few of those guys coming through. You know what I mean? So even one guy that stood out to me for the last couple of years was Conor Bowe. And so, a different kind of a player, like Colin Lahan, but he's not even on this year's panel. So, like, as in, Liam will come with the same group and they'll still be very well prepared, but I think ultimately they'll actually probably fall short.
Marie was expecting a performance or a win from Clare. I was fully expecting to be here this afternoon or this evening, Niall, discussing the sin bin and how wrong it was in hurling. But it seems to be the advantage rule that's created all the controversy over the weekend.
Yeah, I suppose one of the biggest sins we have as GA people, especially hurling people, is we actually have a lack of knowledge of the rules. And to be honest, it was only as the games were unfolding that I realised that there had been a kind of a slight change. Like, again, Ruby, I know different maybe to horse racing, Anthem, that's any rules that are open to interpretation, they're fraught with danger. And, like, it has been one of the really positive things to be allowed to tell us 5 seconds to get through, have a shot at goal, a la like what they have in rugby. And I really don't see why they've changed it. I don't see what the precedence is. I don't see where it came up in previous games. So, again, it's an element to tinkering with the rules. The sin bin, look, there was a couple of instances where it could have been called or whatever else. I don't think cynicism is a big issue, is what they're saying. To be honest, the more you try to sanitise the game, the less attractive it becomes. And I suppose, like, even if you ask me, I said to you there, I was disappointed with Limerick and Tipperary. Like, just as a contest, it lacked any element of physicality, seemed to be wiped out of it. And like, there's probably an interpretation of some of Limerick's play, and to be honest, if I'm to name check one player, say William O'Donoghue, that he's seen as being overly aggressive or whatever, but I thought even in his case he was pulled unfairly a number of times. Again, he's on the edge, but is that not what hurling is supposed to be? Is that not what the allure of it is? If it's a case that we want to see athleticism, well, we can watch 400 metres in the Olympics, and if we want to see guys hitting unbelievable skill with nobody on them, we can watch golf. But hurling is about the contest, and it's about the physicality attached to it, and the more we try to sanitise it, the less spectator friendly it'll become. And so I don't think we're doing any favours to our game ultimately.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are echoing those feelings, so it'll be interesting to see what way it is reffed next time out. And all more, and thanks so much for joining us. It's time for a quick break and then football.
Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Just so you know, Marie, Sam Crowe has just won in Killarney, got his head back in front for the first time in a long time.
Fantastic. For anyone that doesn't know, I have a nephew called Sam Crowe, so I'm really interested in how Sam Crowe gets on.
Battled hard to get up in the last 50 yards to beat Keyless Emery here in the background behind me. Can't say I was shouting for him, I was shouting for the William Mullins horse, but Sam Crowe is back to win in Wales. But anyway, moving on to soccer and the Premier League. Stephen Kelly and Conan Byrne are on the lines. Stephen, some great games, some big results, but I think tomorrow night and Thursday night could be key for Liverpool if they're going to get into fourth place.
Absolutely massive. Massive for them. Just United in good form and going into the game tomorrow. Leicester dropping points again. Didn't look great, and you kind of just feel like they're the team we spoke about dropping out. They did it last year, and you kind of feel like Rennie's going to go. Chelsea look too strong. They're not going to drop many points, but Leicester are the ones you're chasing, and Liverpool got to think they've got a slight chance of getting it.
They
we
have
need
to have.
This,
I mean, sorry, Marie. They do. I mean, if Liverpool beat or United beat Leicester, and Liverpool can beat Man United, the run-ins are chalk and cheese. I mean, Leicester have Spurs and Chelsea. Liverpool have Palace, Burnley, and West Brom. I mean, Liverpool could be about to sneak it, guys.
I really think they could. I've kind of, without looking at the run-in, there was something, I don't know whether it was just mentally, you just couldn't picture Liverpool not being in the Champions League. I think it was just, you just couldn't get your head around them not being there with how good they've been for the last few seasons. So for them to have an outside chance, and, you know, with the Man U game, just huge emphasis on that. But the fact that Chelsea are in a massive game at the end of the season, Champions League, Man U in Europa League final, they've got other things to look forward to. So Liverpool could, that could be an advantage to them.
Yeah, and Conan, we do need that little bit of excitement really for the fourth places, because as Stephen said there, a lot of it does feel like done and dusted. That Manchester City-Chelsea game at the weekend, if that was a dress rehearsal, it wasn't a very good one.
No, it was a poor dress rehearsal. And then obviously tonight with Burnley and Fulham, it's probably Burnley might relegate Fulham this evening, so it all hinges on the Champions League spots. And I don't know if Liverpool just have the quality to do it. They were playing against a poor Southampton team that haven't won a game in five at the weekend, and they struggled to overcome them. Obviously Sadio Mane scoring his second goal since January, and considering the amount of chances that he has had over the course of the last number of months, the fact that he's only scored two goals is very worrying. But yeah, I just can't see Leicester giving it up. I know they're on a bit of a mini wobble at the moment. Very, very poor result at home to Newcastle on Friday evening, and a draw to Southampton previously. But I just think that Brendan Rodgers will regroup, the manager that he is, and I can see them holding on to that fourth place ahead of Liverpool.
Conan, when you watched Leicester on Friday night, it looked like they didn't have a defender on the pitch. Newcastle were just carving them open time and time again.
Absolutely, and look, obviously when they went 4-0 up as well, and there's some of the players that scored, like the likes of Paul Dummett, who's only his third ever Premier League goal, and he's been around the Premier League for a very, very long time. We talked about Joe Willock before and the fantastic signing that was from Steve Bruce, and Newcastle are on a nice little run of form themselves at the moment. But having said that, Leicester were abysmal, absolutely abysmal on Friday, and for a team that is chasing that Champions League spot to perform like that on such a pivotal game, there is question marks around whether they have the mentality to hold on to that fourth spot, but I still do think that they have enough in the tank to hold on to it.
Stephen, it was a bad weekend, or potentially could get worse a little bit later on with Fulham and Burnley if Burnley do relegate Fulham. But for all your clubs, really, because Leeds United defeating Spurs quite convincingly as well.
Yeah, it's not been great for the last few weeks. I keep coming on here and you and Ruby having a great time.
Don't worry, Stephen, we'll get the horn on in a minute.
Oh no, down in the dumps. Now, Spurs, not great result at all. They had a couple of chances, hit the bar a couple of times, created some opportunities, but defensively looked so poor. Just giving opportunities away, not defending properly. Just don't look solid, and that's something that hasn't been addressed, the defensive frailties. Mourinho didn't address it. The new manager at the moment, he's not going to get a chance to address it because he's not probably going to be in charge for long enough. So in the summer, they're talking about players they're going to sign. I think that's somewhere they definitely have to look at to try and improve if they want to have, because they've got attacking options, they've got players that score goals, but they're conceding way too many. And again, the weekend, the show, Leeds cut them apart at times.
Colin, that seemed to be a topic of the weekend. I mean, Leicester were poor at the back, Spurs were poor at the back, but even Liverpool, I mean, Alisson was nearly the best player they had. He made some incredible saves. I mean, what does Jurgen Klopp have to do with Liverpool? I know he's got players back from injury, but he needs more defenders.
He does need more defenders, and he needs to regroup as well. I talked about Leicester needing to regroup, but Liverpool don't have the form as well to... Like, you're looking at them, they obviously they haven't been beaten in five, but there's been a good few draws. I think they've drawn three out of the last five as well. And defensively, yes, they haven't been great, but thankfully they've got Alisson back. They went through a terrible run of form January, February when he was out injured. But getting him back into the team has been absolutely crucial to them, getting those extra points, keeping clean sheets. And without him, they certainly wouldn't be in contention for a Champions League spot. Having said that, I have to say, like, the likes of Phillips and Kazak that have come in, like, they're obviously not going to be Premier League champ. They're never going to have a Champions League win, Champions medal. I don't think, if they're going to be consistently playing in the starting 11. But having said that, they had to come in and do a job. They've been under constant criticism throughout the last number of months. And in the last couple of games, I've seen a little bit of improvement. Obviously, the other day, they weren't great, but at the end of the day, they've kept a clean sheet. And if they continue to do that, they have that outside chance of catching that Champions League spot.
And speaking of medals, Stephen, Cavani has signed a one-year contract extension. And, like, when you think about it, if they do get that Europa League medal, it won't be a bad season for him. But is he what Manchester United need?
He's obviously not the long-term future of the club. He's never going to be someone that you know, they can't pin everything on him for the next, you know, five, six seasons. But for a short-term fix and for experience, and if you've got someone like Greenwood who is learning the trade, he's getting it, and he for me is the one that stands out, is going to be a centre forward. His movement, I know he plays off the right left at the moment, but I think he looks like a centre forward. Rashford learning off him as well. So these guys who are young can pick up experience by playing with someone like that, who just is running off the ball. Like, his header of the weekend was fantastic, just off the full back in behind the shoulders of the defender. You just can't buy that's someone that's got that natural instinct to get across people, but you can teach that to young players. And, you know, to have him around for another season, it's only going to benefit United. But he's not the long term goal or the long term replacement. They need to have a centre pivot, a centre forward that they can use as well. And Cavani's a substitute when someone comes into the fray every now and again, what an option that would be for
them. Stephen, I assume you can't teach people to take penalties. Do you think Aguero will be getting a couple of lessons this morning?
I'm not too sure. As much as you want to criticise Sergio Aguero, I'm not too sure when we talk about goal scoring ability. We can really, like, it was a horrendous, and it was almost like, I'm not sure if I've ever seen him do that before. It's not like him. It was like he was going out and he wanted to go out on a big song, on something to talk about. It got it dreadfully wrong, and the embarrassment of Mendy just stepping up and catching a one was just even worse. But I just think it was one of those things but for me, the long term is the psychological effect of that. I don't think City suffer psychologically at the moment, but Chelsea have beat them twice now in recent history, and going into the Champions League final, that's not going to be good for them. And Pep's going to want to get rid of that, but I'm sure he was furious with how that went down. And I don't think him and Aguero got on the best of times, but yeah, it was a bad miss, and, you know, missed opportunity for City to win the league.
And you looked at Conor Fernandes taking the penalty for United against Aston Villa. He waited for the keeper to go too, though he hit it with a little more power to the corner, but it's always a risk for penalty takers waiting for keepers to go, and it looked to me like Mendy dummied Aguero.
Yeah, well, look, 9 times out of 10, the keeper will dive. And especially it's that to prove it, that in the second half, goalkeepers will always dive 99% of the time, because they want to make that save. And I suppose when you're that confident, like the Jorginho at Chelsea, he can do it as well. Eden Hazard, when he was with Chelsea as well, he's at Real Madrid now. They wait for the keeper to go. And if you wait for the keeper to go, you have an easy goal, an easy tap in. And it's just having the confidence to be able to do that. Now, with Aguero's penalty the other night, or the other day, he didn't wait. It was so obvious that's what he was going to do about two yards before he came up to hit the penalty. It was like the first time he ever tried a Panenka. So, it was never going to work. But with Fernandez, he's very trustworthy from the penalty spot. He's obviously missed one or two. But when he does wait for the keeper to go, he usually puts them in the back of the net, which he did on Sunday.
Yeah, well, I think there was a bit of an overreaction, though, wasn't there? People were going bananas. He had to send out an apology and everything. All he did was chance his arm at an Al Panenka and was coming to the end of his career at Man City. Like, you have to give him a little bit of credit. Lads, thanks a million. Stephen, I hope you get some sort of a result tonight and that you have a little bit of good news, Fulham and Burnley at 8 o'clock. That is all we have time for. We will be back tomorrow, though. Busy show again, so please join us. Tara Stewart is up next.